Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Friday Wrap. Happy to announce that we've got our whole crew back this week. Jazz, locked down in Melbourne again, in flash lockdown, homeschooling at the same time. Mate, how do you survive?
We're used to it. I think in Victoria, we were pretty much prepared that it's going to happen probably at least once or twice maybe this year. Here it comes.
Resilient Victorians, that's all I can say, mate. And welcome back. I think you're looking a lot better than last week, that's for sure. So. Good. We've got John here with us as well. John, how are you doing, mate?
Present. Very well. Yeah, very well.
Ticked off another time. Present. Yes. Yes. Never absent.
That's right.
The only one that's got sure thing. He's the only one got full record at the moment. All right. So gents, I think we're running a bit short of time this week. So, I think we've got a few big topics to cover. So we'll dive straight in. So first of all, an interesting graph that it's being shared around in relation to Biden to propose a $6 trillion budget with increasing the federal spending pretty much to the World War II levels. So, as I said before off air, I'm starting to lose track of all these numbers with the zeros that's behind it, right? Like we used to think billions is huge and now trillions. And, with a budget looking at $6 trillion, it's an astronomical number at the moment that we're talking about here. And that's what he's proposing to try to get it back. Now, people probably can't see the graph. That's unfortunate thing with podcasts. But Jazz, I reckon you're really good at interpreting graphs, so I might get you to tell the story about what that means to our listeners.
So I think the important thing over here is, David, it's a $6 trillion budget that has been proposed. Mm-hmm. If it goes through, again, it's telling you a story, and the story over here is that. In a very macro picture, if we look at the big story that's playing out, is all these budgets and the money supply is being increasing over the last few years. Mm. And even though the money supply is increasing, whether it's through the budget deficits or whether it's through the budget announcements or just through the other packages which have been announced over the time, which is helicopter money to some extent, hasn't really led to increase in the velocity of money in the last year and a half kind of now since COVID has hit. Because if you look at the chart, the money supply is clearly increasing and the velocity of money was starting to tick upwards, but then it has trended down again, purely, I think, because of the fears of the COVID with what's happening in different countries with different mutants. And that's, I think, scaring people off from trying to spend the money that the way they would like to. And all in all, I think the Fed and other central banks are trying pretty hard to let the economy
stimulate spending, basically, isn't it? That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Stimulate the economy, bring the steam back into the economy. But it is not really playing out the way it should be, purely because when you look at the velocity of money, that's the money that's running actually in the markets, it's still negative, trending negative.
Yeah, that's interesting. And just for our listeners, I guess, there's two lines in this graph. We've got the money, M2 money stock, which is basically the money printing, has continually been trending up since the 1960s. And now we're looking at pretty much $20 billion, all the way from close to zero. But the velocity of M2 money stock is basically took a dive, a deep, straight vertical dive around the 2020s, where it shoot down from the ratio of about 1.5 down to about 1.1. So, that's basically the impact of COVID. Now in 2021, there has been a slight uptick. However, it seems to be trending down again. It's an interesting interpretation. I think, Jazz, you're spot on. John, have you got any other thoughts on this?
Yeah, so $9 trillion. I remember when trillion was an expression used only in astronomy terms. So something would take, 1 trillion years to get to Mars or something like this. I'm probably exaggerating, but a trillion was never a word used in the finance world because the numbers would have been absurd. So here we are. Trillions. Hmm. So in terms of the money velocity, obviously there are a couple of components to why velocity is completely collapsed. The first thing is that sort of ties into the Melbourne lockdown. I mean, if you're going to constantly pump people full of fear and not let them leave their houses, where are they going to spend? What are they going to spend it on? So velocity is zero because of all these mandates and fear and so on. But there's another component, and that is that velocity is declining over a couple of decades now because of demographics, and the baby boomers are starting to disinvest and so on. So, you know, if you've got an older couple living in an apartment, I mean, like what how much money do you need to print for it to be compelling for a 70-year-old to buy an investment property, really? I mean, there's demography there as well. And there, and you know, as we've said on this podcast before, baby boomers are like a bowling ball moving through a hose. I mean, whatever they do, the rest of us follow. So I actually think that a lot of the money printing over the last, since 2000, has actually just been there to offset baby boomer disspending, or whatever, I've just made up a word. But it's really just to offset that. Finally, I mean, the spending is staggering. Like these debts, so debts and deficits don't matter until they matter. And one day they will matter. You know, Ronald Reagan was often teased because he was the first president and a conservative president that started all the started the deficits. I mean, I think by the time he left office, the US debt was 250, I'm going to have to say billion, $250 billion. And now it's $28 trillion. And he famously said, they said, oh, what do you think about the deficit, Mr. Reagan? And he said, oh, the deficit's big enough to look after itself. And everyone thought he was losing his marbles, but it was quite funny at the time. My point is this, they're spending money like there's no tomorrow because there is no tomorrow for the dollar. And I think that what's happening is they're getting in there with all this infrastructure spending while they can still, while the money is still worth something, because in a couple of years, maybe 5 to 10 years, they won't be able to do this anymore. So they're trying to convert this paper into roads and bridges because it's really lights out. Like they can't pay $28 trillion back. Mm-hmm. There is no tomorrow, so they're going to make it count.
Yeah, well, that's very well said, actually. So this is the fourth turning that we have discussed that. And I know you were reading the book, John, on the fourth turning. Yep. So it's interesting. I think the message to pass from a very macro perspective, other than the things that you and John have mentioned, is really when there's this much budget proposals being proposed, whether it's $6 trillion, and then you look at the velocity of money along with some of the other stuff that's happening in the economy, I think it clearly points to that we are about to see a secular bull trend, or the markets in the commodities world start to move higher, essentially. So, and I think these trends have been forming over the last, not 5-7 years, they've been forming for almost 20-30 years now. When you look at some of these trends, now they are at a point where, at a tipping point where they're breaking out. And the next few years in that space, I think, will be really fascinating. Part of the picture we have already seen in the crypto land, what happened in the crypto space with likes of Bitcoin going all the way from, I think it was 4,000 or 3,500 during the COVID period last year, to now all the way to 64,000, back to 40,000, wherever it is currently. So part of that story can already be seen in the crypto world, but with the difference being is that commodities is crypto is a fairly new market. Commodities is a very mature market, and these trends are being formed over a long period of time. And when you look at that sort of period and see these trends breaking upwards, the thrust that's built up over there, I think we'll see some magical numbers in the next few years with some of the commodities, in my opinion.
That's a good segue. I think let's have a tackle at that. So what exactly is the trend that you're seeing at the moment that's showing that it's going to break out for commodities?
So commodities are, you got to think of commodities like the canary in the coal mine for inflation. So when you think of inflation, it starts with the raw commodity. It then filters into producer prices. and eventually it leads into retail prices. So we've had record spikes in commodity prices. So we're starting to see it in producer prices, but you know, the central banks would argue that we haven't seen it in retail prices, but it's coming. So if you look at commodity prices like copper, it's like a vertical line up. If you look at nickel, if you look at lumber, which is a soft commodity, all these raw commodities are absolutely going gangbusters, with the exception of two really important commodities, and they are gold and silver. That they're rising, but they're not rising the same way that these other industrial commodities are. And the interesting thing is that so gold and silver are compete with the US dollar, though. So there's a lot of reasons why you wouldn't want a strong gold price, in the same way that you wouldn't care if steel and copper are going up. You care if gold is going up, because it's a competitor to currencies. What's happened is gold and silver have produced these beautiful formations called the cup and handle. And the cup and handle is a big U shape followed by a little U shape on the right to denote the handle. And it's the most bullish pattern in charting. And gold and silver have nearly just completed the handle in the cup and handle. So to Jazz's point, it looks like gold and silver are finally going to catch up to the other commodities, which have gone gangbusters. It's very interesting to see it. But, crypto serves as a new monetary commodity too. I mean, you know, it gets mined and it's fungible and all that sort of stuff. So I wonder if, I certainly think that Bitcoin has stolen some of the thunder from gold, but gold appears to be on the cusp of a big run towards the end of this year and well into next year.
So completely agree with John over there on everything he said. It's a secular bull trend. I think gold started it last year.
Yep.
And then the formation wasn't complete quite yet, along with all the money that was rotating out of gold into, and some of the other commodities into crypto. And I think that rotation, it's pretty safe to say to some extent, not fully, to some extent is complete, with cryptos going crazy on a crazy run for the last couple of months, and now pulling back a bit. That doesn't mean they won't go any higher, but I think they have seen good part of the runs, which is about 60-70% of the run is already complete in that space. So, and now that these formations, technical formations are complete as well within some of these commodities, it just tells you that it's the money that's being rotated. It's a secular bull trend for commodities with cyclical moves up and down, right? So for the last couple of months, cyclical move was down. Now we have broken that trend. We are back into the secular bull trend of prices moving upwards, basically from here. It won't surprise me if we see silver double by end of this year. I think there's a very likelihood of that happening.
Sounds like that's a bet, Jazz.
He likes to have bets.
Oh, look, the question for why wouldn't you own, as investors, we're looking for undervalued things, right? So you park property, which is always permanently overvalued, right? So ignore real estate for a moment. I've never seen government this irresponsible before in the big Western countries. How could you not want a little bit of allocation to gold and silver in the same way that you would say the same? How could you not want a little bit of crypto just in case? I mean, I feel like the same way to gold.
And not to mention, silver is actually not just a financial instrument. It's more of an actual commodity, which is used in a lot of productive assets, whether it is for 5G network or whether it is for some of the other stuff, solar panels and all those things. So when you look at some of that stuff and you look at Biden's proposal of $6 trillion and just in general, all the helicopter money that has been introduced over the last year or two, I think it's fair to say it's about the time for these things to catch up. And what all, along with the macro story, the only other thing that you can look at is basically the charts. If the macro story makes sense and the charts are telling the macro story, you'll put the bet on, right? So the bets are on. So in this case, macro story, we have discussed that many times over the last couple of months since COVID. We have been talking on and off about it, and we saw some of the moves happen, slowed down a bit, crypto took over. We're back now out of the crypto into looking at some of this stuff, and it clearly looks like that it's here to take another leg up. But we'll see. We'll find out. I'm bullish.
There is one sort of catch, right? So there's two sides to every story, and I'm ultimately like precious metals and property. That's what I do, right? But Michael Saylor, the guy who runs Microsystems
Strategy.
Microsystems Strategy. Yep. And he's the guy who got Elon Musk into crypto, right? So he says that crypto is not the anti-dollar. Crypto is the anti-gold. That crypto is what's going to put gold out to pasture. So you never know, right? You never know.
So I'll disagree on that part. I don't think gold is going anywhere. I think what will happen is crypto, specifically him talking about, is he talks more about is Bitcoin. So mm-hmm. I think Bitcoin will take some shine away from gold as a monetary asset, but as a physical commodity that is used in jewelry and all the other stuff, is still here to say. So gold is not going to zero, but it may not go up as fast as probably Bitcoin will. And we have seen that trend. This year, it was a very clear story. We saw that happening, right? So I think what's interesting, though, is the story that played out this week with Ray Dalio back into news, talking about that he prefers. Now, Ray Dalio, I think most of the people know who Ray Dalio is. If they don't, it's one of the biggest, he runs one of the biggest, if not the biggest, hedge funds out in the US, right? So that's Bridgewater. Now, him talking in media openly about that he prefers Bitcoin over bonds. Now, just understand that statement for a second and let that sink in. The biggest hedge fund, one of the biggest hedge funds in the US, is talking about preferring Bitcoin over the bonds and also saying cash is trash, which we discussed that earlier this year. That was a statement that he issued last year, right? So that is a huge deal. That gives, I think, some testimony to this new asset class. Like, so far it was, maybe it is asset class, maybe it is not asset class, maybe it's just a fun story that will disappear over time. But I think with likes of these people jumping on, we have discussed Michael Saylor, we have discussed Elon Musk, we have discussed Fidelity, and now Ray Dalio owning it as well. I'm out of words.
Huge.
Yeah, it is. It is, and I think it's to give our listeners a bit of context. I think the media article basically quotes that Ray Dalio, the founder of Bridgewater Associates, said that he prefers to own Bitcoin over bonds, as he revealed that he now has some Bitcoin for the first time. I think that's that was something that, and it's very, very, you know, coming from a hedge fund of this size, you know, publicly making that type of statement certainly have a great impact in terms of the investor markets, in terms of both the Bitcoin market as well as the bond market, to that degree, right? So, I know John's keen to jump in, so I'll probably just let him take over. John?
Just one thing. The fun part is after him announcing that he owns Bitcoin, the price tanked by 50%.
It's always like that, okay, right? You sorry, thought John. That by the fact that he announces that the Bitcoin would have continued to go up again, but it's actually the other way around.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to the Ray Dalio story other than it's huge, right? It's huge because you're right, Jazz. He's the cash is trash guy. We talked about him before. He's actually always been not long gold, but he's talked about you absolutely must have gold in a portfolio. And he's also been the guy who's, until he confirmed that he was in the crypto space, he was always saying the big risk with crypto is that they regulate it. Essentially, like, until there's regulation, this is this is blue sky. And so he came out and said, you know, that he confirmed that he's in. He didn't confirm how much he owns. And so I actually wanted to throw it out to you guys. How much do you think Bridgewater owns? Now, I think Bridgewater's worth $100 billion. And even if it's not, let's assume it is, because it's a nice round number. We know that I think Tesla bought $1.5 billion.
Yeah,
that's right.
How much Bitcoin? And we can't confirm or deny. It's not like I know this and at the end I'll reveal it. But how much do you think Bridgewater owns?
I'll say is that they probably hold at least 1 to 2% of their assets in Bitcoin. So, wow. Which is a decent chunk of money. So,
1 to 2 billion.
Mm-hmm. At least.
Wow.
And I think it's fair to say that Bridgewater is only just starting to dip their toes in this space. Once they get a full grip of it, once they become comfortable with owning it from a eye of an institution perspective, I think they will be dabbling a lot more over time and taking opportunities where they can when the price sinks or when the price is about to take a run kind of thing. So 1% is the start. Give it some time. I think there's more to come.
David.
Look, I would say probably around the same, maybe around the 1.52-ish max. I mean, you know, like I think I hold the same view as Jazz. Treading the water at the moment, see how that goes. You know, if that works out really well, then obviously the holding position will likely to change. But yeah, that's my thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's less. I think he owns a lot. But I think he owns about 500 million. I reckon he owns a half. And the reason I say that is because I don't think he'd own 1% to 2% of his net worth, because I don't think he's as convinced as someone like Elon, who's a tech guy. This is a hedge fund manager who's probably, you know, a little bit set in his ways, but is interested and curious in this. And I think he probably owns about 2% to 3% of the of his cash flow. And I reckon that that's why it's a much less amount. But I agree with you, Jazz. It'll grow.
Yeah, I think it doesn't matter how much he owns at this point. Maybe it's less. Maybe it's a bit more. We don't know. That's all speculation. But I think what matters is that him accepting finally that Bitcoin or the cryptocurrency is here to stay. And even though there are risks attached to it with CBDCs coming over time and other regulations, but it's still worth holding on to some just in case if the system was to collapse tomorrow.
You know, I was listening to Kevin O'Leary. You know Kevin O'Leary from the Shark Tank?
Correct.
He was talking to Pompliano, the crypto guy, and they were going through their portfolio. And famously, Kevin O'Leary's always said, I've got 5% of my assets in gold, and then every quarter they adjust it up or down depending on the performance. He reckons at the moment it's still 5% in gold, and it's currently 2% to 3% in crypto. And he said when they have a meeting every Monday to decide on the new allocation of the portfolio and what tweaks they're going to do that week, every week they have a debate on whether they should flip it and make it 2% to 3% gold and 5% crypto. And he said, we have the argument every week and it is inevitable that we're going to be flipping it to crypto over gold, which is mm-hmm. interesting.
Well, see, the other thing is, John, which we sort of have discussed in the past is there's a, with gold or any other commodity, there's a counterparty risk attached, right? So, and you know, one of the people that we know in the commodity space, who have had issues withdrawing some of their gold, not the best experience, put it this way, right? So when you see what's, and all the stories coming out lately with some of the other big companies in the commodity space, not allowing or slowing down the whole process or the process being very cumbersome in general when you're trying to withdraw your precious metals out of their custody, right? So when you look at all that and then you go on top of that, that you're paying a certain amount of fee attached to it just to hold on to these precious metals in their custody, and having a bad experience on top of that, even after paying whatever the fee is, versus something like crypto, which either you can use a third-party solution or you can easily store it within your own custody without having any fee charged, I think is one of the things that people will start to think about a little bit more over the period of time, whether it's really worth taking that risk of holding your money with a third party essentially, or holding it in your own custody on a digital wallet, which you can carry around anywhere in the world whenever you feel like. It's just in your head, the key for it, basically.
All right. I have one more question on this subject. Ties into Ray Dalio. Could the government regulate crypto even if they wanted to? Or if they could, would they have done it by now?
So this is where I get a little bit confused. When you say regulated, right? And we use this, we hear this word a lot. It's already regulated. When we say government regulating, which part of it is not regulated? If you want to purchase crypto today, you have to sign up with the exchange. And when you do that, there's your KYC and AML right there, right? And on top of that, you're already paying taxes if you make any gains or losses, right? So good chunk of it is already regulated. I think regulation in this case basically means that whether the government will ever openly come out and say that, yes, this thing is here to stay. And I don't think they're ever going to come out and make that statement because they don't need to. It's already getting integrated into their systems. We have seen some of the oldest banks in the US now starting to custody this solution, right? So custody this asset and building solutions for it. So it's already regulated. It's regulated in every shape and form. It's just the regulations will keep changing because it's a new market. It's a new asset class. So nothing is set in stone. It will keep, as the trend shifts, some of the regulations will change, but it's all regulated. Which, what do you mean by regulation?
I mean, preventing its acceptance in commerce. So you're right. You've mentioned a couple of ways that it's already regulated. Capital gains tax is the main one, to be honest, right? They tax the gains. That's the big one. But I'm referring to sort of, you know, we don't accept Bitcoin here, that sort of thing, or we won't allow you to accept.
Well, if you're charging taxes on the gains, right? So that means you're accepting. You won't charge a tax on a scam. So,
well, you can tax anything that goes up, right? Anything that goes up. But if you you can make Bitcoin unusable by not allowing it to be accepted.
But if I hold, probably not the best example. So I can hold on to some cocaine, right? And the price of it may go up in 10 years' time. And I'll go to ATU and say, you know what? I was holding on to an asset called cocaine and the price has gone up by 100%. Can you charge me tax on that? What do you think are they going to say? Yeah, we're going to charge you tax on that because the price has gone up? Or are they going to say, you know what, we're going to chuck you in the jail for this, right?
I agree with you. That is a terrible example.
I think the point over here is that simple, that if ATO or any other tax department is charging you tax for something perceived as an asset class in this case, right? And on top of that, we are seeing houses, rare examples, but we see houses being sold for crypto, specifically Bitcoin, right? We have seen some of the online retailers accepting it. We have seen Tesla announced it that they were going to, but then they stopped for maybe good reasons that they wanted to consume more green energy, which is basically Elon or Tesla trying to sell more batteries to some extent. It's already being accepted in all shapes and form. The bit where it becomes tricky is that it's not as stable as maybe gold.
Gold or currency, yeah. I don't think it's. I think that the bull market in crypto is in anticipation of it being used, because it's it's a technological breakthrough that solves a lot of problems, but I wouldn't describe it as being overly used. But that's not the point. It's like underusing the internet. The internet has all this capability and all this promise, and we've just got to build the roads and the pipes so that it can become useful. I don't think we're using crypto yet, but that doesn't mean that we won't and we can't. Like it's super useful, super valuable. Yeah. But I don't think we're there yet.
I think the best example for that would be an analogy that will make sense is...
Please be a cocaine analogy.
is the Uber. Uber right. didn't became usable on day one, or it wasn't... It took time for Uber to spread out into all the countries, right? But once it did, it's become now a means of transport. And it's wiped out a whole industry, which is the cab industry or the taxi industry, right? So now I'm not saying that banking industry is going to get wiped out. What I'm saying is that it will take time, and it's going to get integrated into the current banking system. And we see that happening on a daily basis.
Yeah, it will.
There is progress being made. And there are technical innovations happening within the space, whether it's a Lightning Network or whatever, where you can send money instantly from one part of the world to the other just using the Bitcoin layer. And it could be as low as $1 or few cents, which in the traditional world is practically not possible.
Mm.
Yeah.
I hear you. It's all ahead of us.
So interesting times. I think there's some good developments that have happened in the space. The bad thing is the price has dropped, but when something goes up 500%, it's got to take a break and settle down somewhere.
Bound to change, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Dip shortly, but it'll go up again, like all asset classes are doing, right? So
yeah.
John, anything?
Oh, you know, the temptation to talk about the 60 Minutes episode where the Pentagon confirmed that it had UFO sightings, it is extremely compelling, but probably not for this podcast. And we can talk about that off air.
That's why you have your own YouTube channel, John.
Oh, right. Oh, yes.
You talk about anything and anything you love, mate.
That's true.
Yeah. Unless you can monetize and that UFO piece. But otherwise, I don't think it's applicable to our investors. So no, it's more of a
curiosity. I love to talk about it, but we are running out of time. So
maybe we'll do a special segment next time. Yeah. Fair enough. All right.
But that's to the listeners, none of this is financial advice. Do your own research. A lot of stuff that we talk about sometimes is speculation. And some of it is obviously the news in the market, which is worth talking about, like Ray Dalio and Biden's proposal on $6 trillion budget and all the other stuff. So stay tuned. Don't over leverage. Play safe, stay safe. And we'll see you guys next Friday. Cheers, John, Jazz, and David. We'll be right back.